You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Looks like we're flying again. I hauled my ass onto an airplane last week, my baxed ass, my masked face, and flew to Los Angeles. And I wasn't alone at the airport. It was packed. Seeing as we're flying again, maybe a good time to remind everyone of Dan's three rules of flying. Rule number one, shut your mouth. Rule number two, shut your window shade. Rule number three, seriously, shut your fucking mouth. Before takeoff, we should all double check that our seatbelts are securely fastened and our mouths are closed. Those are my rules before the pandemic. There are a few I need to add now. People should have to be vaccinated to fly. If I ran the FDA or the FAA, that would definitely be a rule. Also, don't attack the crew or other passengers or try to open the door to the plane mid-flight. If you really want to be duct taped to a chair, that can be arranged. You don't have to assault a flight attendant to make that happen for yourself. There are people out there who would love to duct tape you to a chair, and they are not hard to find thanks to the internet. So no need to risk arrest or a massive fine or go viral if that's what you want. Now, before someone accuses me of being a misanthrope or an asshole, of course you can leave the window shade open if you are a child who has never flown before. And I am not against talking to strangers. Now and then, I'm perfectly happy to talk with strangers. People approach me on the street, and I'm always polite. I've given impromptu sex advice in bars. I've accepted invitations to dinner from strangers. But on airplanes, I don't want to talk to the person sitting next to me. Even when it's my husband sitting next to me, I don't want to talk to him either. Now, chatty people, on rare occasions, two of you will be seated next to each other on an airplane, and that is a nightmare for everyone around you. But chatty people, it's rare. It's really rare that two of you get seated next to each other on a flight. Seatmates aren't soulmates. If you initiated a conversation with someone on an airplane and they're still talking to you an hour later, odds are good. Odds are way over 90% that they don't want to be talking to you at all. They're just being polite and praying for death. Yours. You know who else I don't want to hear from on airplanes besides my fellow passengers? Pilots, for the most part, during the flight, don't want to hear what we can see on the ground under the plane, because then people think it's okay to open the window shades, and that's not okay unless you're a child. This is your first flight. Please see rule number two. And hearing from the pilot about the shit on the ground seriously interferes with my ability to pretend that the plane I'm in is on the ground and that I'm being driven to Vienna in a very large bus, which is crazy, I know, since we are safer in the air on an airplane than we are on the ground in a Greyhound bus. Look, I said these were my rules. I didn't say that they were fair, and I didn't say that I wasn't neurotic. They aren't. I am. But even if you disagree with me about making small talk in enclosed spaces with strangers who can't get away from you, and even if you're the kind of psychopath who keeps the window shade open during an international flight, and even if you're the kind of person who likes hearing about the shit on the ground from the pilot, I think we can all agree that we don't want to hear something like the clip I'm about to play you from the pilot of an airplane that we are on. Maybe you saw it. It's all over the internet this week. A plane full of people had to listen to the pilot on the intercom say this.
I got married to a woman almost 5 years ago. I could not tell her about my pain and struggle with homosexuality, even though I was in love with her. Just over 1 year into our marriage, I began to give in to the pressure of being gay. I asked other gay crew members questions about their lifestyle and what led them to becoming gay. Pretty soon, I was taking part in that lifestyle. I had sex with men and would come home from work trips and pretend that nothing happened. I met someone that I thought could help me. Ultimately, I want to share the love of Christ with you. If you feel uncomfortable, that's fine, but I will talk to you in the gay area. Thank you so much.
A horrified passenger on an American Airlines flight from D.C. to Chicago recorded that. I don't know who to feel sorrier for, the woman this American Airlines pilot married or the gay crew members who had to answer his questions. If you listen to the whole tape, that guy is clearly in pain, and I don't want to make fun of him. He talks about struggling with suicidal ideation as a result of being molested as a child. A lot of men are molested as children. We don't talk about it enough, not all of them gay, and child molesters often prey on boys that they think are gay, boys that show signs of pre-homosexuality, as the sex researchers call it, because that little gay boy often winds up feeling complicit in his own abuse and is less likely to go and tell an adult, more likely, a trusted adult, more likely to keep it secret. It's sad that this guy, as a child, and still now as an adult, believes what he was told about being gay, believes the lies he was told, that gayness is something you're seduced into or molested into, and he never got the help that he needed. He got Jesus instead. Seriously, I ache for this guy. It is sad. It is really sad. But the people on that airplane, they were really mad, as they should be. That guy should not be flying an airplane full of people. And at that moment, he wasn't flying the plane. The plane was on the ground. But the point is, he shouldn't have been flying planes at all. He also wasn't letting anyone get off that airplane until he finished witnessing to them. What is it about religious people and captive audiences? No one has to listen to any of the shit I say. It would never occur to me to force someone to listen to my podcast. Religious people, they tell themselves they're helping, they're saving souls, and that gives them license to bother people. I like to think I'm helping. It would never occur to me to duct tape someone to a chair or detain a plane full of people and force them to listen to my podcast, even though listening to me could save their holes. All right, before we start, I want to say, yes, I did hear about what's going on at OnlyFans. They're changing their terms of service, banning sexually explicit content. Sex workers and porn performers built that site, made investors billions, and now they're being purged. And while there will be some satisfaction in watching OnlyFans go the way of Tumblr, this is another worrying step toward driving porn performers and sex workers and adult content off the internet. More about that next week. All right, coming up on today's show on both the Micro and Magnum versions of the Savage Lovecast, Emily Blake, co-creator and co-host of Welcome to Kinkyville, is here to talk with me about Welcome to Kinkyville. And before we get started, go online now to pre-order Savage Love A to Z Advice on Sex and Relationships, Dating and Mating, Exes and Extras, a collab project I did to mark the 30th anniversary of the Savage Lovecast, collab project I worked on with my longtime illustrator, the terrific and hilarious, his illustrations are hilarious, terrific and hilarious, Joe Newton. You can pre-order that now. All right, on to the show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Foria, a sexual health and wellness company changing lives in the bedroom and beyond with effective plant-based formulas designed for sexual healing, unforgettable pleasure, and vibrant well-being. All natural and organic ingredients, always and forever. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/savage. That's F-O-R-I-A wellness.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Calm, the number one app for meditation and sleep. For a limited time, my listeners get 40% off a Calm premium subscription by going to calm.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage.
Hey Dan, this is the girl Fag from your last episode calling with a sex success story. So a few years ago, I bought myself a cock, a Fieldo. It's like an insertable strapless strap-on. And I mostly got it for myself for being able to jack myself off while I masturbated and never really thought about using it with anybody. But I met somebody a few weeks ago, like last month, and we started talking about his ass and how he wanted me to fuck him. And the other week, I made love to his beautiful, clean butthole, and it was amazing. And then he sucked my cock, and he deep-throated it, and I came, and he came, and he called me daddy, and it was hot and amazing, and just felt so validating and fun. And now with this new information from you, I feel even more validated about all of it. So thank you. And me and my cock are very happy.
You are welcome, Daddy. Probably sexier when that guy, that boy that you fucked called you Daddy than when I called you Daddy. But I'm going to call you Daddy just the same. Congrats on your success, you butt fucker. You, welcome to the butt fucker club. All right, we like to start each week's show with a listener success story. If you've got a good, juicy success story to share with us, please give us a call and we might start next week's Lovecast with yours.
Hi, Dan. I have a question. So I signed up for this activity and it's a big thing, and I signed up for it without realizing that it was an LGBTI plus specific type thing, but you know, it's all inclusive. I am extremely straight, or at least like, you know, cishet, 85% straight, whatever, passing, etc. And I feel really conflicted because like I really want to do this activity and there's not that many people signed up, and but I don't want to encroach on the space, and yeah, I'm just like, what do I do, you know?
So first you say you're extremely straight, and then you say you're 85% straight, which means you're 15% something else. Because we don't have gatekeepers anymore, it's not that the bar is set low, it's just that all are welcome. If this is an LGBTI or LGBTQ plus space, and you are an ally, or you are 15% bi, maybe that would be heteroflexible, might be a better word to put to 15% bi, but I'm not telling anyone else how to identify. If you are 15% not cishet, then you qualify, at least covered by the plus, if not the Q, queer and questioning. So go. If you have any reservations, if you have any hesitations, speak to the organizer of this event, whatever this activity is that you're participating in, and let them know you have concerns. You feel a little self-conscious. You don't want to crowd anybody else out who's a lot queerer than you are. Since it seems like they have a lot of space for this activity, you're not taking a space that some other LGBTQ plus person might want, I'm sure the organizers will be comfortable with your mostly, your 85%, which I think is a B plus straightness, being part of their activity. So have fun. Have you tried CBD in the bedroom? If you haven't, you're going to want to check out Foria's best-selling intimacy collection. Foria makes CBD products specifically for sex, like awaken arousal oil, sex oil, and intimacy suppositories. They're all concocted with all-natural, organic, plant-based ingredients, including CBD, to enhance pleasure, comfort, and relaxation so you can go all night long. You can expect bigger and better and more memorable orgasms, enhanced arousal, increased sexual pleasure, relaxation, and what we all love, that slide and glide lubrication. Foria's Awaken Arousal Oil is a cult favorite for women. It's made with organic, broad-spectrum CBD and 9 plant-based aphrodisiacs. And for the men and penis owners out there, get ready to slip and slide with the cleanest lube on the market, Foria's famous sex oil. This bedroom essential was designed to provide all natural moisture and lubrication with 400 milligrams broad spectrum CBD to enhance pleasure, comfort, and relaxation. And for penetration, Foria's intimacy suppositories provide targeted support to enhance arousal, pleasure, relaxation, sexual comfort, and blood flow with 50 milligrams of organic broad-spectrum CBD so you can go that much deeper, that much longer. Can be used vaginally or rectally. That's right. CBD up your coochie or up your butt. You will love it. You'll also love trying something new. Trying new things is how Terry and I do it. It's how you should do it too. Foria's products are always organic, plant-based, and sustainably sourced. No additives, no fragrances, no synthetics ever. Foria is offering a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/savage or use code SAVAGE at checkout. That's foriawellness.com/savage for 20% off your first order. I recommend trying their sex oil. You'll thank me later.
Hey, Dan. I am a 33-year-old trans guy calling from the Pacific Northwest, and I have a question about gay bars. Specifically, I wanted to talk about something that happened recently with my partner. I was looking around in our area for a good, like, queer space gay bar to kind of extend our boundaries a little bit. I found a bar that was advertising, but it was a gay bar. And as my partner researched, was advertising that it was like a gay men's leather bar. I thought it was awesome. Honestly, as a trans man, I like being in more masculine spaces. I think the gay men are really hot. I even talked to my partner about possibly wanting to, you know, get fucked or participate in some sexual acts with men. And I was pretty stoked to go to the bar. She was really not, but, well, I mean, she was down. She was down for it. So we show up and we go to the bar, and immediately it's obviously not a space for women. I felt a little bit more comfortable being a little bit more masculine presenting, but my partner did not. There was porn on the TV, which I thought was good. It was awesome, actually. The bartender was really nice. We got a drink. We sat out in the back. But we had to walk through what I felt was a very masculine gay space. And I didn't want to take up that space, even as a trans man. I really wanted to be respectful. And the looks that we were getting were kind of pretty clear that lesbians or a lesbian presenting couple was really not welcome in that space. And, you know, I just wanted to hear what you think about that. As a trans guy, it's really gender affirming to be able to go into a gay male space and be accepted. I think about possibly going back there and how it would make me feel affirmed to be in that space and flirt with guys and possibly have some guys flirt back. But I also don't want to take up space in that area if I am not welcome or if it's going to make folks there feel uncomfortable. So what do you think?
You were stoked to go to this gay leather bar. Your girlfriend was not. She was not stoked. Then you say she was down. I think you would have had a much better time at this gay leather bar that welcomed you both. Whoever checked your IDs at the door welcomed you in. The bartender, you say, was nice as could be and served you guys drinks and was all smiles. You were welcome in this space, but I think you might have had a better time if you hadn't shown up in this gay male leather space presenting as a straight couple, as a man and his girlfriend, a man and his wife, a man and a woman. Think of all the lesbians that we've heard complain, and rightly so. Most people are like, yeah, I get it. I can see why lesbians would complain about women showing up with their boyfriends at lesbian bars. And you showed up in a gay men's leather bar with your girlfriend, a little like the woman who shows up at the lesbian bar with her boyfriend. Of course, women show up at lesbian bars with their boyfriends and get in and are served drinks and are welcomed. But some people kind of are annoyed by that, and annoyed when it appears to be a straight couple in a queer space who feel entitled to take up space in that queer space. If going to the gay leather bar is about affirming your identity as a man and wanting to get that kind of affirmation from gay and bi men, you're likelier to get that kind of affirmation from gay and bi men if you aren't there with your girlfriend. Go alone. I think that's what your girlfriend really wanted. Your girlfriend wanted you to go on your own. And my hunch is that you didn't want to walk in there by yourself, and you talked the girlfriend into going so you wouldn't feel self-conscious being alone. And then you wound up feeling more self-conscious because you were there presenting as a straight couple, as a man with a woman, and you got some looks. Just like the woman with the boyfriend in the lesbian bar is going to get some looks. Doesn't mean you can't go to the lesbian bar. Doesn't mean everybody is annoyed that you're there. But some people are going to give you a look. If that look is going to ruin your night, or those looks are going to ruin your night, and you can't shrug them off and focus on the people who aren't giving you those looks, then don't go with the girlfriend next time. Go on your own. And you will get the affirmation that you are entitled to and that you seek without anybody clocking you as a straight couple taking up space in a gay men's leather bar, which is probably what was going on. Consider this ad as a mental health check-in. How are you feeling today? A little anxious? Haven't been sleeping well? Lacking focus? It's okay to need help sometimes, and Calm can provide support. We are partnering with Calm, the number one mental wellness app, to give you the tools that improve the way you feel. Clear your head with guided daily meditations, improve your focus with Calm's curated music tracks, and drift off to dreamland with Calm's imaginative sleep stories. And if you go to calm.com/savage, you'll get a limited time offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription, which includes hundreds of hours of programming, and new content is added every week. Over 100 million people all around the world already use Calm to take care of their minds. Sleep more, stress less, live better with Calm. For listeners of the show, Calm is again offering a special limited time promotion, 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/savage. Go to calm.com/savage for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a cis gay male. I've followed your career since the Stranger days, but I didn't discover the podcast until the pandemic. And even though you start out the show with a micro version and then a magnum version, I haven't heard you talk about size much. Magnum makes an XL, and that's where I fit in, excuse the pun, to a rubber. And it is definitely a life-changing experience. And I'm trying to pose a question when I'd really like a conversation. But what are your thoughts on size, Dan? And I happen to be pretty obsessed with other XXL men.
I like big dicks, and I cannot lie. I'm not sure where to take this. My position on big dicks, sometimes ass up. I'm pro big dicks. I'm pro medium dicks. I'm pro small dicks. I've had all sorts of dicks in my time taking dicks, and I have enjoyed all sorts of dick, all sorts of sizes of dick. Big dicks are nice. Sometimes big dicks are impractical. Sometimes the dick is too big. I've been with guys whose dicks were pretty much useless where penetration was concerned. Pretty good for knocking out drywall during a home renovation, but not so good for getting your ass fucked. And the size of their dicks, these couple of guys that I remember whose dicks were just enormous, was kind of a curse. And these guys with the biggest dicks that other guys wished they had, the biggest dicks they'd ever seen, wished they had smaller dicks because of the limitations at having the giant dick, the XXL dick, placed on their sex lives. So, yeah, a lot of people out there think nothing better than having the biggest dick that anybody's ever seen, but yeah, not my experience and not the experience of the couple of guys I know who had giant XXXXXL dicks. But yeah, big dicks are nice. Little dicks are nice. Medium dicks are nice. I am pro dick in all the shapes and sizes dick comes in. The discourse, if I may apply that word to this conversation, the discourse around dick, which is always praising big and suggesting that bigger is always better, can make people with medium or small dicks feel very self-conscious about their dicks and their ability to give their partners pleasure with their dicks. And the truth is that people have preferences for medium or also smaller. And somebody with a small dick can provide all the pleasure that somebody with a big dick can, because it's about grind. And yes, a big dick can give you that filled up feeling that a medium or smaller dick can't, but that filled up feeling is definitely something a person with a smaller dick can give to someone else, provided they're willing to call in the cavalry. How big is your dick? Okay, you can't make somebody feel as filled up as they have felt by others. How big's your arm? I bet you can accomplish it with your arm. How big are your toys? You know, guys with smaller dicks, because they're not just relying on the size of their dicks to do all the work, to impress the other person, to fill that other person up, guys with smaller dicks, in my experience, medium and smaller dicks, have been better in the sack, because they didn't just haul out their giant dick and think that they contributed everything that they needed to contribute to the sex session because they arrived with the giant dick. They tried harder. And in my experience, they got harder. One of the curses of the giant XXL dick is they don't always get fully erect. There's not enough blood in the body to pump into the dick and for the dick to retain to get a rock hard erection. So there are trade-offs there. If you like that rock hard steel dick feeling, likelier to get that from someone who's medium or small than you are from someone who is XXL. But if you like that choked out feeling, if you like a dick down your throat and you can't get a breath around it, you really need an XXL dick for that. So yeah, I see the pros and cons. Big dicks, medium dicks, small dicks. I like dicks, not just big dicks. And I cannot and do not lie. All right, there. I went off about dicks for a little while. I hope you're happy, and I hope you continue to enjoy your XXL dick and all the XXL dicks you find out there in the world. At OMGYes.com, you'll learn from the sexual discoveries already made by over 20,000 women ages 18 to 95. Because at OMGYes.com, what you'll find are the findings from the largest ever body of research into women's pleasure, all in one place. OMGYes.com will give you the insight and the inspiration you need to explore and to try new techniques to make you feel good. It's for women, partners, and couples to enjoy and learn from together. With OMGYes.com, you pay once, one time, for lifetime access. It is not a subscription site. And it takes just 10 minutes to learn each technique through simple, tasteful, and crystal clear demonstrations and graphics. You are going to benefit from this. Trust me, you are going to benefit from these new findings tonight. You'll benefit from them tonight, and you will benefit from them forever. In a recent study, 95% of OMGYes users experienced new kinds of pleasure inspired by their explorations and what they learned at OMGYes.com. Wired said, and I quote, OMGYes is indeed great. The design is state of the art and the infographics are smart. So check out OMGYes to see how we finally have the openness and the research we need that you needed, a clear-headed look at the many nuances of women's pleasure. Savage Love listeners get a discount at omgs.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you, again by going to omgs.com/savage for a discount on your one-time payment to access everything at omgs.com forever.
Hi, Dan. My name is Mike, single dad of two preteen girls near Chicago. One of your most recent episodes talked about how to engage your kids to talk about sex and sexuality. Recently, my 10-year-old daughter came to my ex-wife and I and said she was bisexual. Of course, we sat her down and told her that we love her no matter what, and we fully support her and how she feels about her sexual identity. But holy shit, my 10-year-old daughter just told me she was bisexual. We didn't really know what to do with that. We can't tell if this is just a coming-of-age thing kids go through these days, or if it's influenced by some older kids at camp, one of which also says he's bisexual. He's about 13. But after that day, she never brought it up again, so we didn't either. Then last week, she sat us down again and told us that she's actually a lesbian. She finds men disgusting, and she also wanted us to help her come out to our extended family. We told her that for now, we think it's best we keep these conversations between us until we can figure out the way to approach it, which was code for us saying we have no clue what to do or how to move forward.
Lesbian women aren't lesbian women because they think men are disgusting and there's no other option, except for the intersex, of course. They're lesbians because they are attracted to women. It is quite common for 10, 12-year-old girls in the throes of puberty or pre-puberty to think boys are disgusting. It's quite common for 10-year-old boys to think girls are icky. And then, yeah, what usually happens is a 10-year-old boy who thinks girls are icky grows up to be straight. It's the 10-year-old boys who think girls are amazing who tend to grow up to be gay. So I don't know if your daughter's going to be a lesbian if she grows up, but if this is the only reason she's giving you, boys are icky, she may be misinterpreting how she's feeling right now about members of the opposite sex. She told you she was bisexual 2 years ago. That could be aspirational. At 10, she may have just hoped to be bisexual. When she grows up, she may actually be a lesbian, I think. All you need to do as a parent right now is listen and let her continue to think this shit through and explore and allow her to continue to think this stuff through, these identity issues through about her sexuality, in a context where she knows that her parents are supportive, told you she was bisexual. You let that sit there. You didn't argue with her. You allowed her to drive the conversation. And now she's circled back and has told you that she's a lesbian for reasons that, at least from where I'm sitting, I think aren't proof of lesbianism, although I think a young person could misinterpret those sorts of feelings as an indication that they are gay, discussed in the opposite sex. But all of us who are grown may misinterpret those feelings as evidence that they're going to be gay when they grow up or lesbian when they grow up, but not necessarily the case. But what we do know is that your daughter has supportive parents and that your daughter is going to continue to grow up and these things are going to be clearer to her over time. And she came out to you as bi. You didn't argue with her. You accepted that. She's come out to you as a lesbian. You didn't argue with her. You accepted that. She knows from her own personal experience that she can come to you and share what she's thinking about who she is and that you're going to be receptive and supportive. And that's the most important thing. So yeah, bisexual wasn't her final answer at 10. Lesbian, likely not her final answer. Likely not the final answer that she's going to arrive at about her sexual orientation or gender identity at 12. And now I want to say when she gets to the final answer, but is there ever a final answer? Gender and sexuality are fluid. She may identify as bi again at 16 and then a lesbian at 20 and straight at 25 and a lesbian again at 35. And it'll all be good with her dad. That's what she knows from these interactions with you. That's the thing we want to be solid about. Gender, sexuality, the rest of it, that can be fluid. But the support, the loving support of your parents and your family, that's bedrock that we want to be able to drill down into and rely on. And you've shown her that she's got that. And so you're nailing this, Dad. You're nailing it.
Hi, I'm calling from Europe. I'm a 30-year-old bisexual woman. The reason I'm calling is because my partner and I are currently house hunting. And there's a house that's come up on my parents' street, which we're very interested in. But I guess I'm looking for advice on whether you think it's a terrible idea to live on the same street as your parents. For context, we've been looking for over a year for a house. We have quite like a long list of requirements. And we've been having difficulty finding something. Particularly, we keep getting outbid because the housing market is incredibly hot where we're living. It's not next door. It's 10 doors down. It's a very nice street. It's probably one of the nicest in the area, and particularly to find something as nice nearby, the price bracket goes up quite a lot, which is what we faced before. So my parents are very reasonable. They're very, very nice to be around and fun. They wouldn't be interfering, really. They'd try and respect boundaries. And I suppose we have the same values as them, so we wouldn't be worrying about them being nosy or watching over us or disapproving or anything like that. I guess I'm just a little bit worried about things like, oh, will we ever be able to have a party and not invite them and things like that. And we are planning on having kids, so obviously being so close would be very handy in that regard. If you had any opinions or views on the idea, I'd be very interested to hear them.
Having your parents nearby, 10 doors down, when you have kids, that perk, wow, that trumps any reservations or hesitations you might have about wanting to have a party without inviting your parents over. Seems to me that if you have the kind of relationship with your parents where you could really seriously contemplate living 10 doors down from them on the same block, you should have the kind of relationship with your parents where you can say to them, hey, we're going to buy this house down the street, and they'll be excited about that and probably thrilled to have you nearby. And you'll talk about logistically what that means. How convenient it'll be once you have kids that the grandkids can run up and down the street to see their grandparents, and that when they want to have sleepovers at grandma and grandpa's because you guys want to go to dinner or be young people out in the world for a little bit, you'll be able to do that too, and that'll be wonderful, dot, dot, dot. We'd also occasionally want to have parties where you weren't necessarily invited, and I think most parents would get that. You know, you're a generation younger. You have your own friends and peers, and sometimes you want to hang out with those people and have a party with those people and socialize with your peers without it being an intergenerational affair. If your parents are the kind of people that you would rely on for childcare, they seem like they should be the kind of people who could hear that and not be surprised or shocked to hear that. And if they are shocked or surprised to find out they're going to be excluded from some dinner parties at your place for your friends that are your own age, the sooner you say it to them, the sooner they're going to get the fuck over it. And then you can have those parties without having to worry about your parents finding out because they're walking down the street. So go. Talk to mom and dad about this. I'm sure they will be thrilled to have you on the block, and they will either not give a shit that they can't come over whenever you have a party, or they'll quickly get over it. All right, we're going to take a quick break from your calls to do something we never do, and we are not going to make a habit of, so please don't bombard us with requests. We're going to speak to someone about their fundraiser, about the fundraiser that they're currently hosting on Kickstarter to get a project off the ground. Emily Blake is the creator, writer, and co-host of Welcome to Kinkyville. Emily, what is Welcome to Kinkyville, and why am I helping you out?
It is going to be an animated TV series about kink education. Right now, we're trying to fund the pilot episode so that then we can take it to networks to pitch it, to put it hopefully on one of the major streaming services.
Now, I was tempted to have you on. I invited you on because I saw the trailer, and it is really amazing. You know, I got a message from someone on Twitter saying I should probably take a look at this, and I kind of went reluctantly. I've seen a lot of trailers for a lot of projects. People want to get off the ground. This is great, and there's so much bad shit on television about kink that I wanted to give a boost up to something that looks like it might be actually informative about kink and realistic about
That's
kink
the goal.
And hopeful about kink. So tell us about the genesis of the project.
It started out as a screenplay I was writing, and I was having trouble, and I came up with this idea to put in the screenplay about two of the characters doing a show like on YouTube about kink. And the more I worked on the fake show, the more I wanted it to be a real show. So then it just grew and grew and grew, and until a lot of friends were like, no, this should be a thing. And so now we're trying to get, it's basically an animated show because animation is more friendly and less scary to new people who might want to get into kink. And it's me and my co-host Javay, and we're just basically helping new kinksters figure out how to navigate the world safely and without abuse.
So tell me about your co-host, Javay DeBay.
She's really great. She has a show called In Bed with a Millennial on YouTube, and she's actually currently getting her PhD in sex education. And so she's really fantastic. She's just got a dynamic personality, and she balances me out. She's I'm a writer who's experienced in kink, but I don't know all the academic stuff. And so that's what she does. She brings the academic stuff to the party and with a lot of personality.
So usually when you want to get a TV show off the ground, you write a pitch, you go into a meeting, you pitch executives, and they say yes or no. Why create a pilot to take into those meetings?
Nobody knows who I am. So, and nobody knows who any of us are. So the idea is like, we needed a proof of concept, but also if we can generate enough interest on Kickstarter, if we can have enough people, even if they only give like $10, if we can have a whole bunch of numbers of people, and then when we post it on YouTube, if we can have a whole bunch of people watch it, then we can take it to the network and say, look, there is interest. Look at all these people who want to see this happen.
There's an audience for it.
Mm-hmm.
An audience exactly. That may have been frustrated by Bound on Netflix.
Yeah.
So are there enough kinks out there for a show to go on and on and on? What do you imagine covering?
I think I have like 40 things on my list right now, and that's only a fraction of what's out there. Every time I talk to somebody else, they're like, I'm into this thing. And I'm like, okay, adding that to the list. I think we want to start out by talking about safety, by talking about abuse and red flags. And those things are really important to me. But we'll get into specific stuff. I mean, I really want to talk about feet and furries and all kinds of stuff that I keep hearing about and going, oh, well, how do you get into that? What's that about? Why? Why is that cool to you? So there's a long list.
If we destigmatize or demystify kink, can we undermine kink in the process? Isn't part of what's alluring about kink is its forbiddenness, its transgressiveness? How do you balance wanting to sustain what makes kink hot, which sometimes is like, this is so wrong, with wanting to make people who are kinky not feel like they're so wrong?
I think wanting to do things that are wrong is its own specific kink. I think for most people, kink is just an urge for something that they want to do. And I don't think making it acceptable is going to hurt it. Like, for one thing, when I do talk to people out in the wild or at work, because I work in the film industry, it's liberal, nobody cares. When I talk to people at work about this and they find out what I'm working on, sometimes I'll hear people just open up and start to tell me about all the things they're into. And then they always say, like, this is so great. Oh, thank you. I can't talk to anybody about this stuff. There's so much shame that I think it's a far bigger problem that people are ashamed of what they like to do than that we worry about people who might be turned off by the fact that it's not forbidden anymore.
And being able to talk about it, which, you know, I've been doing on this dumb podcast forever, being able to talk about kinks, obviously people still have kinks. I haven't eradicated kink by talking about it. We should be able to talk about it, and it doesn't threaten what makes it hot.
Right.
That you can have friends, sure, you can confide in, experts, schmexperts you can go to and get the advice that you need or the info that you need. And one of the things I would love about actually getting to see your show make it onto television is sometimes you can't quite pin down or articulate what your kink might be until you see something. And you're like, that hits me in my erotic imagination. That taps into some part of my reptile brain. And that's not recruiting people to kink. That's helping people to find out what works for them, what might really give them tremendous pleasure and an entree into a community that they didn't even know existed.
For sure. I mean, that's definitely true in my case. There's a lot of things where I'm like, oh, I would never do that. And then I think about it. I'm like, I don't know. Let's try it. And then I'm like, okay, that's a new thing I'm into now.
So just in the watching the Kickstarter video, you and Javet have a really great rapport and great energy. The animation is beautiful. Who's doing the animation?
That's Lucy Studio. They're out of Colombia. They're mostly women, which was kind of important to me. And they've just been fantastic. They got it from minute one. They understood what we were trying to do. They've been great.
You launched the Kickstarter a couple of weeks ago. How much have you raised? How much more do you have to raise?
Right now, at this minute, we are creeping up on 25,000. And every step of the way, we keep releasing silly videos. Our director keeps letting me do things like hit him with a cane and tie him up and pour wax on him. So we're $25,000. I get to release a Shibari video of him being tied up. They can find us on welcometokinkyville.com. And on all our socials, we're on FetLife, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Kinkyville TV.
So to make it, you've raised 25K so far. To make it happen, to get the pilot made, how much more do you need to raise?
54,000. Animation is very expensive.
So, folks, if you want to see some good, funny, amusing, helpful, instructive, informed kink content, make it onto television. Go check out Welcome to Kinkyville on social platforms and go look them up on Kickstarter. And if you want to see that, if you want to be part of it, and if you want to see the director get tied up in Shibari, you're going to want to go kick in a little bit of money now. Emily Blake, creator, writer, and co-host of Welcome to Kinkyville, thank you so much and good luck.
Thank you so much.
And again, this isn't something we're going to do for everybody's Kickstarter. I apologize. We are making an exception because this is in the Savage Lovecast sweet spot. Again, thanks, Emily. That was a great conversation. And it looks like it'll be an amazing project, and I wish you guys the best.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 50-something cishet female, and I have a question for you about nipple stimulation for men. My partner and I have a fucking hot and uninhibited sex life. But there's just one thing, Dan. He doesn't feel any particular sensation when I stimulate his nipples. This is in stark contrast to my experience. When he stimulates my nipples, I find it very arousing, almost like there's a direct connection to my clitoris. We aren't sure if it's different for him just because we're wired differently, or if it's more a matter of social conditioning, as you touched on in your last show. At any rate, we're both interested in learning whether it's possible to condition his nipples to become more sensitive and become an erogenous zone for him as well. I want to be able to suck on his nipples and give him a hard-on. This is our holy grail. Please help us, Dan.
Your tits are wired. Some people arrive at partnered sex with wired tits. A little nipple stimulation makes them wet. A little nipple stimulation, if they're a dude, makes them hard or enhances the hard-on that they may already have. Now, some people, like you, like me, born wired, born with wired tits. Other people acquire wired tits. And you wire your tits by playing with your tits during sex or having them played with during sex, whether or not you feel an immediate zap in your genital area, whether or not that kind of stimulation, that kind of play is sending signals directly to not to your dick or your pussy, but to the part of your brain that gets your dick or pussy going. Yeah, you can induce that. You can develop that over time, but you got to keep at it. And sometimes what a person requires to wire their tits is more intense nipple stimulation than just sucking. Clamping. Get some tit clamps. Invest in some tit clamps. Put them on. Leave them there for a while. Take them off. The tits will be much more sensitive. It may be that he just needs a shock to his tit system for it to click into gear, for the wires that are there to start buzzing, to get activated. But it takes time, and sometimes it takes years. And sucking on somebody's tits or playing with somebody's tits who isn't feeling it, it's not any less erogenous than licking their armpits or running your hand over the, you know, some other part of their body that's not necessarily an erogenous zone. But to have that kind of skin-to-skin, mouth-to-skin contact is sexy. Nobody has a nipple or a dick or a pussy on their neck. A lot of people like to have their necks kissed. Sometimes we kiss people's necks even when they don't really particularly get anything in particular or specifically or intensely arousing out of it. It's just the intimacy and connection. So you can go at his nips even if he's not feeling it, even if they're not wired the same way yours are wired. And it's only going at his nips and continuing to go at his nips and play with his tits over time that could result in his switch being flipped and his tits suddenly being wired in a way or feeling wired in a way that they didn't feel wired before. So if this is your holy grail, just keep the fuck at it and bring in some toys, get some clamps. You can jumpstart the process with what kind of look like tiny little pair of jumper cables. All right, before we get to listener response calls, let's read your tweets. Faded Philosopher tweets, just heard at Fake Dan Savage vibing with per purse singular gender neutral pronouns from Marge Piercy's Woman on the Edge of Time. I love how naturally and elegantly they flow into my speech and writing patterns. Thanks to whoever called into the Savage Lovecast with the feminist sci-fi book recommendation. I should have looked it up before I spoke about it on the show, but Marge Piercy, who is an Arthur C. Clarke award-winning and New York Times best-selling author, she wrote Woman on the Edge of Time in 1976. So per purse as singular gender-neutral pronoun options have literally been sitting there on the shelf waiting for us to discover them this whole time. I'm not really into science fiction myself, so I'm not going to pick up Woman on the Edge of Time and read it, but I've already ordered a copy of Piercy's 1988 novel Gone to Soldiers, which is set during World War II. That is my jam, and I'm going to be reading it this weekend. Britt Marie Hermes tweets, thank you at MikeHall314 for the super understandable and clear breakdown on the new Apple software to help stop child abuse. I was a little bit freaked out after listening to at Fake Dan Savage talk about it on the Savage Lovecast. Well, I was a little freaked out when I talked about it on the Savage Lovecast, talked about Apple's new software. I may have succumbed to catastrophizing. I do have a touch of worst case scenario disorder. So I have invited Corinne McSherry, legal director for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, to come on next week's show and walk me through what I got right about Apple's new software and what I got wrong about Apple's new software. That's coming up next week. Freaky Faye tweets, in episode 773 of the Savage Lovecast, did anyone else hear at Fake Dan Savage say, when you're in a hole, stop dicking, then realize it was stop digging? I've apparently never heard that expression before. Well, I obviously need to speak more clearly whether you've heard that expression before or not. I need to enunciate. When you are in a hole, stop digging. Don't stop dicking. Never stop dicking unless the hole you're dicking withdraws its consent, in which case stop the dicking immediately. All right. Thanks to everyone who posted about the Savage Lovecast to your social media this week. We really appreciate it. And if you want me to see and possibly read your tweet about the show on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, please be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now, listener response calls.
Hi, I'm calling with a comment on the phrase sexuality issue. About 5 years ago, that's how I would have described myself because my sexual interest waned in every single relationship I've been in. But in 2016, I got into my first polyamorous relationship, and I was actually upfront with this person. I told him, like, hey, my sexual interest wanes over time. It just happens. But 5 years later, I still want to fuck him all the time, every time I see him, because what I actually needed was some space My monogamous relationships were smothering me. And once I was able to break out of that, I was way more horny for the partners that I'm with.
Hi, Dan. I just finished listening to episode 773 and had some advice for the poor woman with the sex pooping issue. Women have an amazing anatomical superpower in that they can just reach up into their vagina with their finger and palpate their colon, and they can tell if there's poop in there ready to come out. They can even digitally use their finger to kind of push that poop towards the outer world and go ahead and stimulate a bowel movement. Most of the time, when you actually need to go, that poop is just sitting there sort of very close to the end in the rectum, and you can pretty well clean yourself out very, very quickly and easily that way. It seems to me like maybe a lot of women don't know this particular fact, but reach on up in there. You can feel if there's some stool waiting to come out and get rid of it.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. This is in response to the caller in episode 773 phoning in about greeting his friends as the theys. Firstly, caller, I agree with Dan's advice verbatim, from his observations about the they-them pronouns to his advice about how to greet your friends. I only want to add that some people these days seem to be looking for a shorthand way of expressing everything, which makes sense when you're texting someone, but if you're actually speaking to a person, consider not shortening everything. Instead of greeting your friends as the theys, just say their names because it's kind and requires little or no extra time or effort on your part. And instead of trying to save time or put in less effort to communicate by verbally saying things like BRB, just say be right back, since it's exactly the same number of syllables, thereby saving you no time or effort. So caller, I get it. You want to influence the language and I encourage it, but please don't butcher the language or dumb it down to the point where it's not even recognizable anymore. I know that our culture is pushing us to want everything instantaneously these days, but not every expression or greeting needs to be expedited. Moreover, not all of these shortcuts, like the theys, are as cute and clever as you think.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call the Savage Lovecast at 206-302-2064, or you can use the Voice of the Mobile app on your phone to record your question or your comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. My Dirty Little Film Festival Hump is available to you. It's coming to theaters, possibly near you, also online this fall. We're headed out on tour in person with masks on to cities throughout the U.S. and Canada with the Hump 2021 lineup from last spring. And there's a new Hump's Greatest Hits Volume 4 streaming online starting September 10th. And don't forget the deadline for making your own film. Hump 2022 is December 8th, so get get all the info you need to buy tickets or submit your film at humpfilmfest.com. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Check out Welcome to Kinkyville at WelcomeToKinkyville.com. Follow Emily Blake on Twitter at TheEmilyBlake. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Cartoonian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast.